My name's Dr. Sarah Metcalf, one of the medical editors of Australian Family Physician, and our December issue of the journal is on the topic of juggling resources. And under that umbrella, Professor Mark Harris is the lead author of a paper on multimorbidity, negotiating priorities and making progress. And Professor Harris is the Executive Director of the Centre for Primary Health Care and Equity at the University of New South Wales, and he's here with me to discuss his article today. Welcome, Professor.
Yes, fine, thanks.
Okay, so this is a multimorbidity is a growing issue in general practice, and I'm sure anybody who is in practice has come across it. Can we perhaps just start by defining exactly what we mean by that term, multimorbidity?
Well, it's having more than one long-term condition, so a condition that's present for 6 months, so the co-occurrence of multiple long-term conditions in one person is the definition.
Yes, and I suppose it's similar to a term we might be familiar with, comorbidity, but it tends to suggest a greater number, which seems to be where we're heading with a lot of patients. I was surprised some figures that you quoted, over 50% of 65-year-olds report five or more conditions, which seemed a large proportion of people.
Yes, it's going back a step. I think the issue of comorbidity really implies that there's a, you know, one main condition, and then there's other conditions that can affect that, and that's been the way that people have thought about things in relation to hospital care, for example. So a patient may have an admission for, let's say, heart disease and at the same time have depression or something else as a comorbidity. In general practice, that doesn't make much sense. People, you know, there's no kind of order of priorities of conditions necessarily. That will be very much based on the individual person. So I guess that's the reason we use the term multimorbidity, firstly because there are often more than two conditions, but also that there isn't one main condition, that at different times a person who might have three or four conditions, one of those might be the main concern, but that will change over time. So that's the reason for using the term multimorbidity. And yes, it is very common and becoming common as our population ages and as we get more chronic diseases. And that's due to both not only the aging of the population and the prevalence of lifestyle risk factors, for example, but also because our treatment's getting better. So, for example, some conditions which were fatal, like HIV/AIDS and cancer and so on, actually are persisting to be long-term conditions, which is a great advance, but it gives us some additional problems in terms of how to manage those conditions.
Yes, and new sets of challenges, and this really is the domain of general practice. It's a nice contrast to look at a hospital setting where the specialty is going to be focusing on their particular problem, whereas for GPs, exactly, it all becomes significant to the overall well-being of the patient.
Yes, indeed. I think the impact of multimorbidity in terms of its effect on people's lives is something which GPs really understand, and they probably more than many other parts of the medical profession, we really see the consequences of chronic conditions in terms of people's ability to function and the impact in terms of disability and so on. So all of those things are absolutely within the domain of general practice.
Yes. So You've got a significant impact on quality of life for people in terms of, you know, time spent managing more than one condition. We often sort of give all this advice about what people should be doing, but to think of it in the context, if you've got a list of several conditions you're trying to manage and then you're doing everything you should be for each one, that's a very, very significant time commitment, if nothing else, and also financial potentially.
And it's, it's really stretches both patients' and providers' capacity. For patients, I think it's obviously a burden in terms of the multiple conditions that they've got to manage, and they'll often be similar risk factors, but a set of risk factors and a set of conditions, and they'll be having to manage all of those things, and that will involve a whole set of different tasks. I think, there have been studies that show that patients can have literally dozens of things that they have to do to manage their conditions, to monitor, to deal with risk factors, to in taking medications, perhaps reporting to providers, seeking care from different providers, and that can add up to a lot of time and money, but also it can add up to a lot of complexity, and that's a problem, particularly for patients who perhaps have less educational background, lower health literacy, and lower English language literacy. So it's a real challenge for them, and it's important that the health professionals generally understand that and understand that they need to tailor their approach to each person and their level of coping, really, their level of capacity, and so that's a big challenge for us as health professionals.
Yes, yes. And then obviously there's a question of competing priorities, and I think this is one that we often come across. And in the article, you've used the example of perhaps someone with epilepsy who needs a particular medication to control that health problem, but then the side effect of that might be weight gain, which then impacts on perhaps their cardiovascular health or their diabetes. So there's this how do we get that balance right, I suppose. Have you got some suggestions or some principles of how we should approach these patients in general practice?
Well, I think it is important to be, first of all, aware that managing each condition there may be synergies. So, for example, sometimes with chronic diseases, they have the same risk factors. So someone who has arthritis in the knees and has diabetes, losing weight will be important for both conditions. But often there are conflicts that can occur, particularly in relation to medications. And we need to be really thoughtful about that. Sometimes that will allow us to, we'll have to prioritise conditions, so we'll have to make choices. And it's important that we make them explicitly. So if, for example, we choose to focus on a person's diabetes and not their depression, or we choose to focus on their controlling their epilepsy at the expense of their possible weight gain, then we need to be clear that we're doing that, and also to try and take measures to reduce that negative effect. So, for example, in the case of someone with epilepsy and potential weight gain, that we monitor the weight carefully, and we advise the patient that they're likely to have some increased appetite, they're likely to have be at risk for weight gain, and so they do need to be taking extra effort to maintain their exercise levels, exercise tolerance particularly, and their reduce their caloric intake, or at least not increase their caloric intake, because that's going to lead to obesity. So really trying to anticipate these sorts of problems that can occur, and this is this is complex and it's difficult to explain to patients. So one of the things that's useful to patients in particular is to be clear to patients around what we're trying to achieve for each condition, and to show patients in some way how they're performing, how their conditions are being controlled and managed. And in the article, I've used some a little traffic light diagram, which a card which can be used for patients just to let them know what's happening with their various conditions and some of the measures that they might need to be taking in terms of their lifestyle to manage those. And it may be that they're not an immediate problem, but there's something that is on the horizon, such as weight gain or the risk of developing diabetes or something similar. So so it's really quite difficult, and the more conditions that people have got, the more difficult that is, and also the more the less capacity that people have to self-manage, the more difficult it is.
Yes, absolutely. I'll just refer people to page 851 for that figure on the traffic lights. It's essentially, you know, the patient's conditions set out and looking at a review with the GP at each time of year and the traffic light colour corresponding to sort of how well that particular condition is being managed at that particular visit. And I guess it's a way for the patient, as you say, to keep track.
And I think that the key to this, and this is one of the reasons the article's got the heading "Negotiating Priorities," is that it's not just about the health professional setting priorities, but that we as GPs working with the patient to set priorities together, and that requires an ability to find common ground, which is the sort of heart of what patient-centered care is meant to be about, finding common ground between the doctor's priorities, which in the case of multimorbidity will be, you know, numerous things, and the patient's needs and priorities, which might be based on a number of other factors, not just what's going to be you know, most important from a physiological risk point of view, or what's important from a clinical point of view, but what's important in terms of how they're able to live their lives and how they feel about their condition. And that's a difficult thing to do, but it's again a core skill for general practice.
Yeah, I found your point about bringing things back to function, and that being, you know, not just physical function for the patient, but function psychologically, socially. So the very much that patient-centered whole person model being a way to think about this, and really engaging with the patient to work out what their priorities are in terms of their life and how their conditions are affecting them.
Yes, and one of the strengths of general practice is we don't just see people once or twice. We see people over long periods of time, perhaps even their whole lifetime. And that does enable us to kind of work through these things and to not feel like we've got to deal with everything at exactly the same time. And that notion that, sure, we may be setting priorities at a particular time, but we can eventually come to some of these other problems, and that's again where having a clear idea of what the problems are and a plan for eventually getting to them, so that we don't leave things that aren't urgent but are important in the long term, and we also don't overlook things that are very important to the patient. It's easy in the complexity of it all, you know, for example, to be someone's got diabetes and they've got obesity and perhaps they've got high blood pressure, very common comorbidities, and perhaps they're also depressed, to overlook some of the things that are really important to the patient, which may be about how do they maintain their function and their quality of life. And just because, not because we don't consider those things as important, but because they kind of get dealt with they're down the list. And but having a list and really coming back to that and reviewing it is really important.
Yeah, and care plans are something that, you know, is in place in our primary care health system at the moment, and that we do use a lot as general practitioners. How do you think we can make these work more effectively and for our patients with multi-morbidity?
Well, I think, again, it's about bringing in this idea of negotiation into the care planning process much more. It was always intended that the care plans should be a negotiated thing with providers and patients, but all too often, again, in the busyness of practice, they become really a doctor's plan and a way, obviously, of getting people access to, for example, allied health services or psychological services and so on. When we ask patients, they say, "What care plan? I didn't know there was one," you know, or they don't. They know there is a care plan, but they don't really know what it's about, or how it might relate to what they should do, their goals and priorities. So, I think it is important that there's a little bit of discussion and negotiation around what goes into the care plan, and that patients really that see it as part of their care plan. And the other thing, of course, is that it's important that it's not just a referral tool, but that there is some negotiation with the other providers. Because one of the key problems with multimorbidity is that you've got multiple providers involved in the care, and if they've all got slightly different objectives, slightly different plans for the care, and slightly different goals that they're trying to achieve, then that really creates some of the real problems that patients with multimorbidity experience, which is sort of fragmented care that not really knowing what's going on, getting conflicting advice from different providers and so on. So consistency is not always possible, but it is something we have to try and work towards, and getting some degree of agreement. And that's particularly important for people who have, you know, low health literacy, who are really get often quite confused about what the goals are, who's doing what, but also what they should be trying to achieve, because they pick up on slightly different messages from different providers. So I think that's a key aspect of care plans, is that they do need to be negotiated. Now, that's difficult. Practically, that's very difficult in general practice. You know, we've got the allied health providers often in a different place. They're not physically co-located. You can't have a conversation with them easily. It is possible to have a telephone conversation, not necessarily about each patient, but about some of the more complicated patients. But I think that idea of a two-way discussion is really important. And if that can happen at least within the practice, so that you know, the GP and practice nurse at the beginning of a clinic talk about some of the things that are planned for the patient, you know, of a session. Tom Bodenheimer calls them a huddle, the Americans typically talking about gridiron, where they have a little huddle on the field to decide what their next plan of action is. And that idea of actually talking through, just informally, sometimes in the corridor, sometimes, you know, in a 10 to 20 minute meeting before the clinic starts, just reviewing some of the more complicated patients. And if that's not possible, at the end of the clinic session, or at least at some time where this is not a formal sort of case conference, but where there's just a review of what some of the major issues are and what everyone's trying to achieve. So that, again, patients start to get a consistent approach. And also the different providers are clear about what their role is and what their own priorities should be.
Yeah, and the classic example too is the patient that goes off to various specialty clinics at the hospital, and I guess that really is the role of the GP to try and draw all that disparate information together, you know, when the letter finally turns up and try and, you know, make some sense of it for the patient as well.
Yeah, it's been this is a particular bugbear of most GPs is the communication and coordination with specialist services, so not only medical specialists, but specialist teams like mental health teams or aged care teams and so on, and that's can be quite time consuming and difficult, and particularly if you're not getting full information. I think that's something that has been quite well addressed in the Department of Veterans Affairs Coordinated Veterans Care Program, which is, I guess it has the advantage of there being a little bit more resources there to provide mm-hmm. that little bit of extra time. But it's really important, and especially where you've got, as sometimes you do have with veterans, mental health problems as well as, significant multiple physical problems as well. That's where it's really important to engage everyone.
When we're looking at, these patients monitoring their progress, so looking at how we're going, it's again a little more complex because, you know, the individual disease markers that we currently use, for example, HbA1c for the diabetes, it's not necessarily going to be telling us the whole picture for patients with multiple issues where we may have explicitly chosen not to focus on diabetic control, for example, because of another priority.
We're focusing on, we're just not focusing on getting really, really tight control so that we're settling for the moment with an HbA1c of, say, 7.9 or 8. I'm not suggesting that we would sort of not be concerned about an HbA1c of 11 or 12, but in the context of another series of significant other problems, like severe depression or severe mental illness, that might require some attention initially. And this is one of the challenges of general practice, and one of the reasons that general practice sometimes gets criticized by specialty practice, because, you know, we don't control the HbA1c ideally always, and we sometimes the cholesterol levels are a bit higher than they should be ideally, and so on. But we do have to look at the whole patient, and we do need some measures of that, and that's quite difficult to do in clinical practice. There are some patient assessed measures of their care, things like the PASIC, and there are some measures of whether people achieve the goals that they set for their care. So, for example, as part of their coordinated care trials in South Australia, they developed some goal-setting tools that really looked at whether people were achieving their goals. So I think it is important to look beyond single disease markers. That's not saying they're not important. You know, we recognise that glucose control in diabetes or blood pressure control in diabetes and hypertension is very important, but we do need to take into consideration the patient's perspective and particularly what effect it's having on their life and how they're functioning and whether they're achieving the goals that they've set for their care. And that's an area I think where we need some better tools to help us to measure some of those things.
I guess to sort of sum up what we've been talking about today, Mark, are there sort of some key points on this topic that you'd like GPs to take away with them and perhaps try and start implementing in their practice?
Well, I think the critical... Well, first of all, that multimorbidity is very common, and that's no news to GPs, but it does require, in general practice, the way we think about it is different to the way that is thought about in hospital practice, for example, simply because there is no such thing as a main disease, really, usually, and that will often change over time. And so sometimes we have to set priorities between conditions at a particular point in time, and that will needs to be based not only on what we think is important, but also what the patient thinks is important. And a key feature of this has to be this patient-centered approach, where we negotiate priorities amongst not only the healthcare providers but with the patient, and we find some common ground across all of that we can work with, and to recognise that those priorities will shift over time, that we need to look at not only at the control of individual diseases, but the effect that all of the conditions are having on the patient and their ability to function and their quality of life. And true multidisciplinary care plans are a key tool for achieving some of these things. But that does require more time than sometimes we have, and particularly to engage with not only the patients but the other providers that are involved in the care, so that we're providing a very consistent approach, a consistent set of messages for the patient, and they feel like there's a group of people that communicate together and caring for the patient as a whole, and not just treating different parts of it, and so sort of really avoiding this kind of fragmented, highly specialised approach to individual conditions.
Yeah, it's certainly a very topical issue, and will be more so as our population continues to age. It's going to be really interesting to see how we progress and the research informs perhaps system change to kind of support our efforts in this area.
Yes, I think we're right at the beginning of this. There's been a sort of rapid increase in the amount of literature, for example, about multimorbidity, most of which is on, what it is and how common it is and what problems it causes. We're only just starting to get some research coming through about what we should be doing about it and how we should be managing it. And I think we've still got a lot to learn.
Yeah, it's a fascinating area. Thanks very much for your time today, Mark.